Joining us now is our friend Justin Adams, of course, from CBS 4 Denver. You can follow him at Justin Adams TV on Twitter. Justin, thanks for the show and thanks for joining the show. And I want to actually switch to the Broncos very quickly and talk about the first couple games from Teddy Bridgewater, specifically his demeanor in the not only the huddle, but the pocket, the ability to maneuver, the ability to stay calm. How much of that, and I'm not trying to throw Drew Lock or anybody under the bus, but in the last few years, how much of that a quarterback who appears cool under pressure rubs off on the rest of his offense?
It's just that confidence that you know that whatever happens, you know that something good is going to happen at the end. I think the best play actually last week came in a sack. It came in the first quarter when the Broncos were driving and they wanted to do a tight end throwback in the red zone, and Josh Allen was able to race through and get a sack on Teddy Bridgewater.
Right.
And those are the plays where this what would have happened last year with Drew Lock. Actually, we saw this last year against the Pittsburgh Steelers, right? Garrett Bowles, and then they're going to credit him with the sack. But a sack happens, and then usually the ball is fumbled, the quarterback gets hurt, and now your team takes a step back for several weeks. What happened with Teddy Bridgewater? He said, okay, I'm going to try to get away, but I'll just hold the ball, and I'll eat this sack, and we'll go and get a field goal, but we're going to get points at the end of the day. That's the difference between Drew Lock and Teddy Bridgewater, understanding when a play is there and also understanding how to protect yourself as a quarterback when you're going to get sacked.
What were your impressions, especially early on, regarding Courtland Sutton and worries you looked at it? As surprised as the rest of us when a guy who appeared to be at least a little gimpy early on and he and Bridgewater failed to connect on a couple of early passes deep, that he ended up having a career game. Did that surprise you given how he looked early on?
100%, because it showed that, number one, it showed that in the NFL they're not respecting him yet. Where was the double team? Where was the safety
help?
Nowhere to be found. So what the coaches saw on film was this. Courtland Sutton is not 100%. Like, his speed is not 100% there yet, or he's not a threat to the defense from his speed. And so because of that, they're like, oh, well, we'll just leave him singled up. And that's why it was so important for him to be able to catch those deep passes. The first two, there was one where he was being pulled on his jersey and could have caught that one, I think, if he didn't have his jersey pulled. But he didn't look fast early on. But then in the third quarter, it was like a different gear he was able to go into and was able to catch that ball. So it was great to be able to see Courtland Sutton be able to get back to his old self later on in the game.
Justin, the Denver Broncos, as it stands right now, are the only double-digit favorites for this weekend, 10.5 points favorites over the Jets. Now, I think that has more to do with the Jets than the Broncos, to be entirely fair. But you have the Broncos as 10.5 point favorites, the biggest in the league. You have the Carolina Panthers just winning tonight, becoming 3-0, the first 3-0 team in the league. Life comes at you fast in the NFL, doesn't it?
Oh, 100%. You better stack up the wins as fast as possible because things are about to get real here for the Broncos, okay? Just think about after this game, because I know we could talk about, this game. Look, they should win. Like, this should be a W.
Of course.
I don't care if it's 1 point, 10 points, 20 points. It should be a win. But then you look at the next week. You're taking on Lamar Jackson, who just on Sunday Night Football reminded everybody why he was the MVP a couple of years ago. He was able to win that game against Kansas City. Then you go on the road to Pittsburgh, which is always a tough place to play. You come back, you play against the Raiders team, who's really surprising out there, especially with their offense and their improving defense. And then on a short week, you're traveling to Cleveland, to a place where there are some people out there who believe that this team could have a deep run in the playoffs. So for the Broncos, it's important for them to continue to have the confidence to build this confidence on offense and on defense, because when you take on Baltimore, when you take on Pittsburgh, the Raiders, you have Washington coming up, you have the Browns coming up, you need to make sure that you're on all cylinders, especially on offense, in order to beat those teams.
I don't want to sprain myself on the shoulder, patting myself on the shoulder real quick, but about the Raiders, and nobody expected it. Go ahead, Sandy.
We could have anticipated that.
I was saying that right here on the show, yeah. but go ahead.
I wasn't. So we're split on that, and Sean so far looks like he's a lot more right than I am. But your point about the opposition as the dregs of the league stopping after Sunday is well taken. If you take a look at, I think, what most people would consider to be the top 10 teams. This is after Sunday. The Broncos have 6 games left against those teams. They have 5 games left against maybe the second tier teams in the league, the teams that, including Denver and Carolina, have been somewhat surprising so far, right? Along with the teams that we had a pretty good idea would be good, even if they haven't been terribly impressive so far. The only 3 games they have against teams that look like they won't be contending for playoff spots, Detroit and Cincinnati, and that's late in the season after the Week 11 bye, and Philadelphia, the last game they play before the bye in Week 11. That's about it. Those 3 games you'd expect them to win. That gets them to 6 wins. They're going to have to find 4 or 5 wins against teams like Dallas on the road, Pittsburgh on the road, the Chargers obviously twice, Washington football team in here, Cleveland on the road, Raiders twice, Baltimore here, Kansas City twice. The reason they had an easy schedule was because their first 3 games were against 3 of the 5 worst teams in the league. By anybody's fair measurement, it really does change after that. I had a quick question for you, and it's something we're going to bat around a little bit later on. The Broncos are 6th from the bottom in the NFL in blitz rate, but it seems this year, and especially last week, as if every time they blitz, something really, really good happens for the Denver Broncos. Is that because they're blitzing in unpredictable ways on different down and distance situations, that they're catching people off guard? Or does that mean, why aren't you doing it more when the times you've done it have worked out so well?
I think it's the first part that you said, what it was on down and distances where you don't expect it, because you don't want to, and Vic Fangio talked about this actually last week, especially with rookie quarterbacks, you don't want to just blitz all the time and make reads easy for them, right? To say, hey, just hit the side adjustment, hit the guy who's going to cut off his route when they blitz and just make it easy. You don't want to try to blitz them every time to have that man-on-man coverage. You want to go into zone several times as well. We know that's what Vic Fangio likes to do because it makes the quarterback think just that extra second, which leads to turnovers, which leads to, you know, the front four being able to get home with their pass rush. So I think it's especially with a guy like Alexander Johnson, who's generally the guy who blitzes the most. It's just having those times where it says, okay, we stopped them on first down with the run. Now let's go and do something on second down and force these guys to make a quick decision with the pass. So I think Vic Fangio is doing a great job. But at the same time, let's call it what it is. The Broncos play Daniel Jones, and they also play Trevor Lawrence. Not exactly 2 guys who are lighting up the scoreboard right now. So, of course, it's helping that they don't have to blitz a lot. And when they do, good things happen. But at the same time, they're not playing Patrick Mahomes and Justin Herbert, to say the least.
Not yet, at least.
Two guys against whom blitzing may or may not be a,
be
good
a particularly
idea.
Good idea. Let's change a little bit of the sign here. Let's look at the running game for the Denver Broncos. Javonte Williams, I talked about it earlier this week, did not have that many carries, did not have that many yards, but the impact felt larger than that. The physicality of Williams as a running back. How much value does this have to a Broncos team that needs to be able to convert third downs, needs to be able to be better on short down and distance? And can you see him overtaking Melvin Gordon in the relatively near future when it comes to touches?
Yeah, I thought that he already did. I mean, doesn't it feel that way at least?
It feels that way.
I know that they have the whole starters and whatever, and Melvin Gordon gets more snaps. Yes. Only thing I know is this. When it's third down and medium, third down and long, I see Javonte Williams in there, and he's the guy who is a pass blocker. And he's not just doing an okay job. He's doing a great job as a pass blocker.
Hasn't messed you up.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And that's the number one thing that I look at. Are you the type of guy that you have, A, the speed, you have the desire, he has the desire definitely as a runner, but most importantly, are you a good pass blocker? And that's what Javonte Williams is, or at least has shown in the first couple of games of the season. So as the season does move on, Sean, for sure Javonte Williams will take over. But again, this is a 17-game schedule. You're going to need both guys. No, there's no more of just having Terrell Davis out there. There's no more of just having, you know, one guy who runs the ball and just totes the rock all over the place. You need to have two running backs who are ready to go, and that's what the Broncos have right now.
Who are they going to miss more, Josie Jewell or Bradley Chubb?
Josie Jewell.
Wow.
I mean, but here's the reason why they miss Josie Jewell, because you also have to look at Malik Reed. He had 8 sacks last year, led the team in sacks, really in relief for Von Miller. You know, you have Browning as well, who could do a really good job, at least from what we saw in the preseason games, off the edge. But Josie Jewell, it's those instincts. Those are the things they're going to miss. Guys, let's not forget he had 2 tackles for losses in the game against Jacksonville before he was injured. Those are the small things that kills drives. When a linebacker is able to shoot through a gap, able to diagnose the play before it happens, shoot through a gap and get a tackle for a loss, those literally kills drives because they set the team back a couple of yards, and now you're looking at 2nd and 12, 2nd and 13, rather than 2nd and 7, 2nd and 6, and you stay in front of the chains. And so those are the things that I think they're really going to miss the most with Josie Jewell being out. And don't get me wrong, Bradley Chubb is extremely important. When he is on, he is a force to be reckoned with. Don't get me wrong. But the Broncos can do enough from a pass rushing standpoint to be able to at least, quiet down some of the pain of not having Bradley Chubb out there on the outside, but missing out on essentially your middle linebacker, the guy who knows your plays, the guy who calls your plays. That's going to hurt this team a lot.
Talking to Justin Adams from CBS4 Denver, Justin Adams TV on Twitter. And Justin, again, over this week thus far, we haven't had anybody say that the loss of Bradley Chubb was going to be more significant than the loss of Josie Jewell. Not anyone. How much should the Broncos be paying attention to that?
100%. I mean, this is my thing, okay? When you look at Mike Purcell, for example, who didn't miss practice on Wednesday, right?
Yeah.
So let's make sure that he's fine,
right. Okay?
Your job as the defensive tackle is to eat up, especially a nose tackle, is to eat up as many blockers as possible. Because you want to leave your linebackers clean to be able to make plays. That's the reason why Ray Lewis, as great as he was able to make all those plays. Hanotti Nada being in front of you really does help you out a whole lot, okay? In the same way, if your linebacker is a step behind and doesn't know where to go once a play happens, is not able to take advantage of your nose tackle, taking up 2 or 3 blocks with a guard and a center combination, and he end up gets caught in that trash, then what should be a 1-yard gain or could be a negative gain ends up turning into a 10, 15-yard gain. All right? So that's the biggest thing that I see from there. I understand from a pass rushing standpoint, the Broncos only have 3 sacks, all right? And all 3 are from Von Miller, okay? They have to be able to have more pressure, especially going up against the Jets this week. But when you look at how games are won, and you want to set a team back on 2nd and 9, 2nd and long distances, especially when they want to establish the run, and trust me, the Jets are going to try to establish the run, especially in front of a crazy crowd at Mile High. The biggest thing you have to do is to be able to stop the run. And if your linebacker is a step behind, that's going to be problems for the rest of your defense.
I have to ask you this. I hate to do it.
Oh, no. I know where we're going.
I've watched CU football for more than 40 years.
Yeah.
Most occasions over the last 10 or 15 years in person, as often as I can. I have never seen, over 40-plus years, any CU team on offense look as helpless and, frankly, hopeless as that team did on Saturday. And I'm not sure I understand exactly why that is, since this was a CU team a year ago that seemed able to run over people And now, at least for the moment, they have as a starting quarterback someone who is an option quarterback, stylistically, and yet he isn't deployed as if he's an option quarterback. They have two freshmen at the quarterback position. They don't seem to have a receiver who can get separation. I don't know if they'll make a lot of changes or just a few. It looks like, at least for now, they won't be making all that many fundamental changes. But judging by how they looked offensively on Saturday, I don't know where win number two or at least win number three might come from. Maybe win number two comes against Arizona. I don't know.
Yeah.
But win number three, I don't know. I think you're looking at 10 or 11 losses.
With the way this offense is looking right now, I don't know how they could beat a junior college team, to be honest with you. I mean, it's really bad. I think there was one stat that I saw that the passing game, I think Army has more passing yards per game than the Buffs right now.
Pure option like, team.
I don't know how that happens. Like, how does that happen? The number one thing the Buffs have to get down to is understand who they are. And I understand that, you know, you have all these guys that you recruited, right? You have, you know, Brendan Rice, you have, you know, Dimitri Stanley, all these other guys. But you have to go and have your playbook to what you have in your personnel grouping right now. And the reality is just like you said, if you have an option quarterback, then guess what? You need to go and run some plays like that. You have to be more patient with running the football. If your guys are struggling with pass protection, then hey, get after those other guys. Run the football.
Right.
And if you can't run the football, then punt. Because that's pretty much what they're doing already, right? So the Buffs have to be able to find a way how to become very creative on offense. They need to take more shots. Just take shots and see what happens to try to at least open up the defense a little bit more. But at the end of the day, fellas, it's really this. You have to take pride. You have to take pride that you're wearing the black and gold, and it has to mean something to you. You cannot, at home, be humiliated by Minnesota. I could understand if it's USC. I could understand if it's one of the top teams in the nation. But Minnesota? Minnesota? You were dominated by a golden gopher. A gopher who eats trees. Like, you're dominated by them. Like, at some point, you have to be able to step up and say, we're going to take pride. We're going to do something on offense. And maybe this team might have to just overcome their coaching if that's what's going on with this roster right now.
He is Justin Adams. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, Justin Adams TV, and catch him at CBS 4. Justin, thanks for all the insight. Hopefully, when we do this next week, we'll be talking about a Buffs win. They do get Arizona State. They are not favored. But, hey, that's why they play the games, right?
Well, you know my rule, right? The number one rule I have, I never trust anybody 18 to 23 years old. I just hope that Arizona State will be that team this week that will overlook the Buffs for one reason or another, and the Buffs are able to step in, go to Arizona State and get a dub.
Thanks, Justin. Have a good night.
All right. Take care, fellas.
All right.
He doesn't sound terribly convincing.
New. Justin joins us on the Johnson Auto Plaza hotline.